This episode of Current Geek is brought to you by Braintree. If you're a developer or manager of mobile apps and are searching for the right payments API, check out Braintree. Braintree's new V0 SDK makes it easy to support multiple mobile payment types with one simple integration. To learn more and try out their sandbox for free, go to braintreepayments.com/currentgeek.
I have
Current Geek!
Current Geek!
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Current Geek. This is Current Geek, the weekly proceedings of the meetings of the Frog Pants All-Stars. Geeks of the world and you to keep you current on all things that matter most. My name is Scott Johnson. His name is Tom Merritt. Hi, Tom.
Hello, Scott Johnson. How the heck are you?
I feel like we just did this like 5 minutes ago, for real.
Yeah, and you know, as your brain slows down, yeah, as you grow older, yeah, it feels like time passes faster because you're not actually paying attention to all the seconds anymore.
Isn't it? There's some science behind that, right? Where as you get older, sure, because you've sure accumulated more time.
I bet somebody can make up some science around it.
Let's do it right now. Start rumors on the internet. That's a great idea. Speaking of the internet and rumors, there's a rumor that we have a special guest on today, and we do. I'm a huge fan of his work. You know him from MaximumFun.org, Bullseye, Judge John Hodgman, so much more. Can't even list it all. Jesse Thorne's on the line. Jesse, hey.
Hi, how's it going?
Great. It's so nice to have you on.
Oh, thank you for having me on.
Your interviews are insane. I listen to it all the time, and the people you get in there, it's just it's amazing stuff, and I love your style and all that. So we're honored to have you on our little show.
Thank you very much. Now, I presume when you say that my interviews are insane, you mean
insanely good. Let me finish that sentence. Insanely good. Okay. No, they're just great, and you always sound so, it's, I don't know, it's something to learn from, because you sound so relaxed with people that the rest of us hear, you know, some of these people are huge stars and gigantic names in Hollywood, and you seem to handle them with deft care.
Today, the lead singer of Sleater-Kinney told me that she thought I was way older from listening to my show, which I wasn't sure how to take, and then she like realized that wasn't really a nice thing to say to someone, uh-huh, necessarily, and then she said, I mean, like you have an old soul. Okay. Yeah, I guess.
Nice recovery.
I have old shoes.
That'll get edited out.
Well,
who knows?
Jesse and I were on a panel together at this conference down in San Diego a few weeks ago, and it was a great time. We had a good conversation, and I ran him down afterwards. And thank you, Jesse, for being gracious enough to take us up on the invitation. It's cool to have you here.
Well, I'm grateful to have been invited.
Well, good, because we have stuff to talk about, and a lot of it happens now.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
Tom, take it away.
Now, as we always do, we pull a large majority of the things we talk about here from our subreddit at currentgeek.reddit.com, and our first item comes from Selhorst, who actually created the item he linked to on the Reddit himself. I'm sure there's some kind of insider trading rule against this, but I'm going to go with it anyway. He uploaded to Imgur an image that may answer a definitive mystery of our time. It is an image from the original Star Wars comic book issue number 1 from Marvel, and on page 29, there is an unambiguous panel of art depicting Han Solo shooting Greedo with a blaster. And Greedo's blaster is angled away from Han Solo, unfired, therefore proving Han shot first, at least in the comic.
Now I'm annoyed because I have this comic in an old box someplace and read it incessantly as a kid, and I don't remember seeing this, or I would have
right
referred
there,
to it,
yeah,
as.
Yeah. I know the audio people can't see it, but I've got a copy myself, and you can see the evidence right here. Back and to the left goes Greedo.
So did you have to go to the comic book store or get up on eBay, or you just hit the archives?
I just had to have received this for Christmas in 1977 and never have thrown it away.
Wow. He's a nerd is what he is.
Yeah.
I mean, I did the same. Mine's buried somewhere, but the fact that you have it handy there, I guess you knew the show was coming, so you probably did a little prep there. But
I did have a tip-off when I wrote this item myself.
That's insane.
I like the idea that you started reading that, and then you're like, you know, it just so happens.
Right over here.
I assume that one of the things I think, Jesse, is weird about this old comic is that it was essentially a almost word-for-word, although they cut out a lot, but a word-for-word retelling of the movie. And I don't feel like we get that anymore with comic books or any other kind of sort of literature post movie. They don't really go through and just, you know, give you scene for scene, word for word, the way it appeared in the film. Are we just, have we gotten too smart since then? We're not going to fall for that anymore.
I think the novelization, the film novelization, is also on the ropes, right?
Yeah. Seems like it. Like nobody.
Well, it's all going in reverse now. Like so many films are actually just based on a book in the first place.
That's a good point. But like, are gone the days? Like this year, will we get? Because I remember back in Phantom Menace days and Clone Wars and all that, they would come out, or Attack of the Clones, excuse me. Someone's going to yell at me for that one. They would have a book that would come out either simultaneously or a bit ahead, and it would
usually
be
ahead. Yeah,
yeah, it'd be a complete novelization. And I haven't heard of a thing coming out with this J.J. Abrams treatment.
Do you guys know if J.J. Abrams is working on a radio play adaptation at all?
Oh, that'd be great.
I haven't heard.
I'd love that.
That would be amazing.
Because I love that old stuff. That, the Doctor Who stuff they used to have on the radio, the old Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy thing the BBC did back in the day.
Which was the origin of Hitchhiker's Guide.
Actually. Right. That's where that was the first, well, other than the book, it was the first...
I think they made the radio show before. Yeah,
oh, did they really?
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. The book was an adaptation of the radio show.
Oh, that's crazy. I used to think that that was, well, who, you know, time is weird when you're young, but I remember hearing that first. So I guess I, you know, and I it took me years to read the books, but I guess I'd actually done the original thing before I knew I did it. I was a hipster and didn't even know it about Hitchhiker's Guide. But
those Brooklyn hipsters and their fealty to the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy comic sci-fi novels.
Yeah.
Anyway.
That's so Williamsburg.
Yeah. But if you had to bet, so Tom, do you think they do any kind of that thing this time around? Or are we done with those days? And the novels, any novels coming out heretofore not released will be, you know, new fiction since they've erased all the other extended fiction. This is all going to be new.
They've announced... I don't remember how many, something like 20 books are coming out along with The Force Awakens. So you're going to get more than just a novelization. That's the thing now, is it's not so much about like, oh, we'll put out a comic book and take the script and illustrate it. Thanks.
Yeah.
It's, you know, let's craft new stories and additional material. And I'm not saying that's bad. It's actually really fun. In fact, all of these Star Wars books that are the first to come out since the acquisition of Lucas by Disney have had amazing authors like Kevin Hearn.
Mm-hmm.
So I love what they're doing with it. But yeah, there's something about being able to pick up the comic and know like this is going to be like straight to the point about the movie. And in fact, Cap Kipper pointed out in the chat room, there's some things in that comic that aren't in the movie either because they were deleted or dropped, which was always confusing to me. I was trying to, when I was a kid, I would be like, wait a minute. Am I remembering this from the movie or from the comic book? And I would start to get confused which was which.
Yeah, is yours the big tabloid size one or the little the small
yeah,
one?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it's
three part tabloid size. So this was I think collected after they had put out the normal size.
That's what I had as well. That thing was awesome. Jesse, are you as a guy who has to talk to a lot of celebrities and stuff, and I'm sure that some sort of Star Wars folk are going to end up on your show at some point. Are you tired of the phenomenon yet? Have they oversaturated before we even get the damn thing in December?
I try not to think about it too much. So as long as I don't think about it too much, it's not going to oversaturate for me. I will say I interviewed Carrie Fisher a couple of years ago I think she had a memoir out. And Carrie Fisher is as fun and cool a lady as you could ever hope to talk to.
Mm.
She is just really funny and just really smart and cool. It was an absolute delight. Actually, it's funny, like of the great geek touchstones of Star Wars and Star Trek, I've talked to Carrie Fisher and George Takei, and both of them are just magical human beings who couldn't be more delightful. So I feel like maybe I should stop now before I get disappointed by someone.
Well, she was the best thing on stage at the celebration, so I can totally see how she might be a real riot in the studio. That's fantastic. Well, there you go, Tom.
All right, Star Wars. Atomic Space Gun sent us the news that Amazon will now rent you a goat to mow your lawn.
What?
If you live in a city where a goat provider is available, you must go look in the lawn care section of the Amazon Home Services. Goats are an eco-friendly way to keep your lawn trimmed, of course, yeah. Much quieter than a lawnmower at 7 a.m. And the goats will also throw in free fertilizer deposited on your lawn.
Jesse, you seem really excited about that.
I could not be more delighted about it. I read about this goat business, and I could not be happier. My wife's family is from Marin County in California, where goat lawnmowers have been de rigueur for like 5 years now. And because, you know, it's very hilly and everyone's very crunchy and very affluent. And it is every time I see a herd of goats in a place where people should be, I am so happy. Goats are one of the top animals. They eat tin cans. They're one of the only animals with funny beards.
Yeah. They sound like people when they yell.
They stand on top of cows sometimes.
Yeah.
Goats are as good as it gets. And the fact that finally we're getting a sharing economy for goats just couldn't make me happier. I mean, hashtag barnyard disruption or whatever. I'm all over it. I love it. I'm like ready. I'm like sitting here ready to order the goats to my house right now.
Are you worried that they would? Are you worried they would not stop with the parts of the grass you want them to eat, and they'd go too low, and you'd end up with big dirt holes in your lawn and things like that?
It's probably worth it, don't you think? You know what, though? The only time I've ever had an experience like that, you know, I live in Los Angeles, but I live on the very edge of the city of Los Angeles, sort of on the side of a hill, and so I do have like neighbors with chickens and stuff, and my wife has a cousin who has a pet pig who lives in their apartment in San Francisco. And he and his wife came down to Los Angeles to visit and they needed a place for the pig to stay. So we agreed to have this pig stay in our backyard. And they're like, oh, he'll love it. His name's Atticus. And Atticus will love the backyard. And there is nothing more terrifying than the squeals of a pig in your backyard that misses its mommy. Like, it was genuinely heartrending and a little bit terrifying.
Yeah.
It was a pretty intense experience. And I'd be a little worried about those goats.
A little bit delicious. Were you ever tempted?
I did not eat Atticus.
Right. That was the question. That was,
I did not
all right.
We eat got that, Atticus.
We got that cleared up. This entire
even
episode.
Even after he bit me, which he did.
That's showing some restraint.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. A pig bite. Is that a threat? Because it's all gums, or they got some snappers in there.
It's a pretty serious. No, it was no joke. Yeah. This bite was no joke. And I, you know what? Like I got a big green egg in my backyard. I can smoke meat. And he's lucky. He got away lucky. He's lucky. I like Teresa's cousin.
You just point pointedly.
Amazing
at the smoker.
That's amazing.
Get him to calm down. Yeah. So there you go. People of Prospect Heights, rank your goats. I was sad when I lived in San Rafael, which is in Marin County, that we never did get goats for our lawn. I felt like I was left out of the culture there.
Oh. Blew it big time.
And you can't just pull them out in anywhere, right? There's got to be some kind of zoning stuff, obviously, because this is for a certain county. You can't just do this anywhere, right?
And we had coyotes, too, so that wouldn't have been good.
Oh, yeah. They like goats.
They do.
Yeah.
They like them like we almost liked Atticus. Catacon let us know Hulu has landed the rights to stream episodes of Seinfeld in a deal worth $875,000 per episode. That's about $160 million. Don't worry about the math. Some Seinfeld reruns have been available on Sony's Crackle video platform, but the Hulu deal marks the first time the series will be available in its entirety streaming online. Sony Television may have been overheard telling Yahoo and Netflix, it's not you, it's me.
Yeah. What's the deal with Hulu? Okay, here's my question. Do I have to have Plus, or can I watch George be an idiot for free?
Breaking news, they have rebranded. There is no Hulu Plus anymore.
Right. So that makes the question harder. Do I have to pay? Or can I get it on the free part of Hulu that is no longer called Plus?
Well, I mean, the reason I ask is you remember I think I told you the story. I canceled Hulu because it kept telling me on not just computers, but on devices where only Plus would work. And if you had a paid subscription, it kept telling me I was blocking ads and punishing me with like 3-minute blank stares and saying this, when this ends, then you'll get your programming back. But hey, since you blocked this commercial, we can't show you your stuff. I'm like, can you even load an ad blocker onto a Roku device? Like, I don't even know why I was being singled out
something
that way.
Something on your router could have been
something blocking. Weird latency thing. So I just rage quit and said, that's it. I'm not, I already pay you for twice. I watch your commercial 6 times in a row and I pay you. So I think this is lame. We're it's not you, it's me. We got to break up. So I did. Now I am tempted now to wonder what the heck, but I didn't know Plus and Hulu were just the same. Does that mean the free part went away?
The free part is being diminished in favor of the paid part, and they're trying to build up the content of the paid part, hence this big purchase of Seinfeld, which, by the way, I watched in its entirety maybe 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Absolutely holds up. Not just a great television show in 1995, a great television show in 2015.
Yeah.
Well, and that seems to be the interesting part of all this is going after the heritage classics, right? You want to have your House of Cards, you want to have your Daredevil, but you also want to have Friends. That's what Netflix went for, right?
Sure.
And now Hulu's going to have Seinfeld and Star Trek in there, which I think Netflix has Star Trek too. They kind of go wherever somebody will write them a check. But yeah, so getting the big back catalog with the original. So Hulu's next step is to have a hit original, really.
Yeah. And they're trying, I mean, everyone's trying to, but the $875K per episode is pretty close to what Netflix paid for Friends. I kind of wish Netflix would have gotten the must-see TV I prefer, which is Seinfeld, where I won't have to watch all these commercials, and they would have gotten Friends over there, and maybe my wife would have cared. But I'm not a giant Friends guy, but I was addicted to Seinfeld and love it now and have DVDs somewhere.
Good news is Netflix does have Cheers, which I've also been watching. That's been the last 2 years of my life. There was a lot of episodes of Cheers.
How does Cheers hold up? How's it go now?
Cheers holds up very well. Cheers is a really, really well-made television show. Mm. Great performances and just really funny. And it asks nothing of you emotionally. So it is the perfect thing to watch when you otherwise would just be flipping through channels and then stopping on one of those like pawn shops shows or something.
Sure. I think I think Frasier holds up really well too, by the way, which is also on Netflix. And it's about the only spinoff ever that kind of did all right and held up. There's probably other examples, but that one did.
Certainly of its era.
Sure, yeah. Sure. There are plenty of failures you could compare it to, but it's pretty funny. So I don't know. I just wish all my must-see TV Thursday night NBC shows were on in one place, but now I got to pay to get back on Hulu. And if they tell me one more time that I'm blocking ads, Tom, I'm going to be freaking pissed.
Plus, you got to play for greens. You got to pay for green scenes so you can watch The Single Guy.
Ugh, I can't do that. The Single Guy. Oh man, I had forgotten that existed. Thank you very much for that.
Caroline in the City.
Oh no.
In conclusion.
There's more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
List goes on.
Yeah.
Hey, the Habs Nerd let folks know that a group at NASA's Johnson Space Center have shown that a controversial electromagnetic drive does show evidence of thrust, even in a vacuum. The EM drive invented by Briton Roger Sawyer can supposedly convert electric power to thrust without propellant by bouncing microwaves around in a closed container. A lot of people say that violates physics. NASA scientists found evidence of thrust in a version of the drive last year, but a lot of critics pointed out that external conditions, things like convection currents, could have caused that reading. So before you go getting too excited, the results still need to be replicated, peer-reviewed, and published. But recently they said, okay, we did it in a vacuum, and we still saw the evidence. So we could be going to Alpha Centauri soon.
And it says 9.4% the speed of light. That's a giant...
I just put that in as a note. An EM drive could propel a ship to about 9.4% the speed of light, which will allow you to go the 4.3 light years to Alpha Centauri in 92 years.
That's not bad.
It's all right, right?
You'd have to plan it out, though. You'd have to have very... Yeah.
It's not fast.
You'd have to have people you knew could have children, get them on the ship, right? They'd have the first generation. It's going to be the third gen of kids, though. That would need
to be. 92 years just gets you there. You have to add an extra 38 years if you want to slow down and stop at Alpha Centauri.
Oh, right. You can't just, you can't just emergency brake right out in the orbit there. That's not how it works.
Not so. Well, I mean, I don't know. We just violated one law of physics. Why not violate a couple more?
Sure.
I like the idea that we're introducing emergency brake turns into spaceships. I think the Fast and the Furious 8 is writing itself right now, guys.
Well, that's all they have left to do. Ship. Yeah, take it to space. There's nothing else to do with that weird
isn't the
movie.
Isn't the big problem when you go that far in space that you get cancer and die? I interviewed Mary Roach about her book, Packing for Mars, which is so great and funny and cool. She's the best. And I remember that there's like all the plans for going just as far as Mars involved people who already knew they were going to die soon because of the amount of space radiation.
Oh, I didn't realize that. So there's
there's some shielding issues.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So you just get lucky, you throw the dice and hope you're not one of the ones that, you know.
Well, it's one of those things where, like, if you're going to get excited about some guys at NASA who bounced around some microwaves in a container and think maybe they saw some thrust, you're going to be like, we'll figure the shield thing out. It's fine.
I guess so. We got transparent aluminum glass or whatever it was the other day that got announced. Why not this?
Wait, transparent aluminum from Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home?
Yeah, let me see if I can find that. Basically, it was a story on our morning show, but they figured out...
I used my Mac. I just spoke into the mouse. And
hello, computer.
Computer.
Hello, computer.
Yeah. As Scotty apparently had zero memory of any history regarding computers at that time. But anyway, there's something about some aluminum combined with something else. If you flatten it enough, and cheap, it's cheap too, because you can actually do this very expensively. There's some other kind of equivalent to this, but it used to cost a lot of money. They figured out a really cheap way to do it. So now you can make, you're going to put the whole rock chip industry completely out of business, is my thinking. You know, because eventually we'll all be driving around in cars with like transparent, impervious material. But anyway, nothing to do with this story.
Wonder Woman plane.
But maybe that'll help block all the radiation, was my point, so you can get to Alpha Centauri.
Well, but it's transparent. That would let more
radiation.
Good point.
Yeah, transparency is a problem when it comes to that.
Yeah, don't worry about it.
I'm no expert.
Because we're going to solve the energy problem thanks to Tesla. Tesla announced batteries for your house last night. The Tesla Powerwall is a lithium-ion battery pack you bolt to your wall. It can go inside or outside. Tesla's going to sell them to installers for $3,500. That gets you 10 kilowatt hours, or you can save a little money if you only go for 7 kilowatt hours. That one's only $3,000. Takes about 60 to 90 minutes on average to install, so it's not super complicated. 6 inches thick, 220 pounds. Powerwall comes with a 10-year warranty, and you can pre-order now for delivery later this summer. SolarCity told Fortune that it would probably sell the 10 kilowatt hour battery for $5,000. That would include installation and a converter to make it work with your AC pack, because hilariously, Tesla only makes a DC battery pack. But anyway, Tesla also announced the Tesla Power Pack for larger utilities and enterprises. Amazon's using it for their data centers already, and that one costs $250 per kilowatt hour.
So SolarCity's owned by, or that's another Musk.
Elon Musk, the guy in charge of Tesla, is also the chairman of the board of SolarCity. Correct.
Okay, so that's what I thought. Not that that's a bad thing, but my understanding was that they would make it so, if let's say Jesse Thorne, and who's just on the west side of LA, he says to himself, I'm going to get
come on, the west side of LA,
what
the
did I say?
East side of
east
LA.
Side,
thank
sorry,
you
east
very
side
much.
With all the chickens is what I meant, where all the chickens are, chickens and pigs. If you went and got yourself, if you got to some panels, Tom's on the west side, that's right.
I'm one of those people.
You are. Well, you're straight out of Compton, as you recall.
Right. Yeah. That's kind of the opposite. But anyway, go ahead.
But anyway, so if he gets some panels right now, the way it works is he pays the whole schmear. There's a big government subsidy, which is nice, so you get a little tax rebate and all that stuff. But you put it up there, and excess power goes to the city, and you can kind of get paid for that. And there's like these weird things you can do. My understanding with this is SolarCity kind of becomes the middleman and has options where they sell you the electricity. They become your power company.
Yeah, there's all kinds of plans for SolarCity, and there's states that don't allow you to sell your power back. California is one of them. What these batteries do is they make things simpler so that, for instance, if you do install solar panels and you're in California where you can't sell the excess power back to the city, you can save the power instead in the battery. Mm. And that there have not been affordable, reliable ways to do that up until now. So this battery is going to let you have a solar panel and then store that power and use it at night and potentially live off the grid. You might not need any power out of the grid at all. It could also balance your power usage across grids. And they're working with utilities. They're working with California Edison on this already, where people could have the batteries just to be able to store electricity when it's off peak and cheaper, and then use it during a surge, like on a really hot day when they need it to power the air conditioning.
Justin, are you going to get one?
This actually is a technology development that is sincerely exciting to me. Being as that I live in Los Angeles, where it is always sunny, and I live at the very edge of the Los Angeles City power grid and utilities grid, where I don't have gas, and so my entire home is electric, there is a potential significant savings to me, in addition to just the benefit of not using fossil fuels and so forth.
Sure. Like, I'm in the same boat. I think this sounds great, and I love the idea of charging in the day, powering the night. That sounds like a song from the 80s. But,
night
being
Rangers, yeah, something like that.
Like all the benefits Jesse mentioned, but just the fact that it's kind of affordable. Like, you could look at an investment of $5,000, which includes the installation and AC converter, and not that's not a big deal. I mean, it seems like a chunk of money, but compared to what it used to cost to outfit yourself in this way and not really have this kind of control of storing your own power and becoming this self-reliant, that's kind of a huge deal.
You're going to have to spend a lot of money on MREs, meals ready to eat.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And of course, you're going to have to get a few guns.
Yeah. And when do we get our own internet and stuff? We need our own internet.
Though, I mean, if you've got your own power, you could spend fewer.
You can get laser guns.
Yeah. Wait, just saying.
This is too big of a jump.
And you could have a fridge going.
Sure.
You know,
sure you could.
Absolutely. Got to keep those laser guns cold, right?
If people in Idaho are listening to this, just calm down up there. Don't get too excited. It's a little ways off. Everything's fine. I have just now lumped everyone in Idaho into the crazy gun packing. Let's build a self-sufficient bunker.
You ever met anyone from Idaho?
Yeah.
Jason Howell.
Yeah.
Tall, really nice.
Don't trust that guy.
Total survivalist.
Don't trust that guy.
Tech reporters went crazy this week for the Microsoft HoloLens. If you haven't seen it before, it's an in prototype device which can make virtual items seem to exist in the real world around you by actually projecting them onto your eye. It isn't the first time, or both eyes, I should more accurately say, isn't the first time Microsoft showed it off, but they've made some improvements in the augmented reality goggles since we last saw it in January. Whole thing is self-contained now. Doesn't have to be tethered, doesn't have to be plugged into a computer. And Microsoft still says the HoloLens should be available to the public in the Windows 10 timeframe. So Windows 10 is supposed to come out this summer, and that means like within a year after that, we should be able to buy a HoloLens, put it on, and have a robot in front of us, have another virtual robot put over it.
Whoa.
That was one of the things they demoed.
I saw the new demonstration and went into it very excited, thinking finally they're going to, because the first one was kind of fluff piece and didn't really show us much. And I thought, well, this will be a chance for them to show us what they've come up with since, and they can demonstrate it better. It's already kind of hard to demonstrate AR without you having it on your own head. At least with VR, you can kind of pipe the video out and people can see what they're seeing. It's difficult to do in this case. I still think I'm seeing a lot of smoke and mirrors, though. And I don't know why I feel that way. It's not that anything shown there was, outrageously produced or whatever. There's just something, I'm a little fuzzy on whether this is going to be the hot business they want me to think it is. And I still think the headset's too big. And I know that changes over the years and they iterate and they get smaller. But Jesse, where are you at on this?
Do you think it's possible that you think it's smoke and mirrors because it almost literally is smoke and mirrors?
Maybe, yeah.
That is like the premise of the entire product.
It kind of is. Like, you're seeing even the stuff, even these objects that are supposedly materializing in the room and are mapped and positioned in different places and moving as you move with them, they look smoky. Like, you're not wrong. There's an actual comparison to be made there.
And there's something very similar to mirrors projecting them into your eye.
Yeah, so I don't know. I'm all for this revolution. I'm all for big competition in VR and new ways of interacting with our world and whatever they come in the form of. I think it's great. I just like the leapfrog. What's the other one? Frog.
The Magic Leap.
Magic Leap. There's nothing with frogs. Just Magic Leap. That also seems like a dream that isn't exactly accurate.
Well, that one has never been shown to the public, so that one is entirely a dream.
Right? Yeah, that's true. So I don't know. My gut tells me VR is a little closer to the bone. I mean, I have an Oculus Rift here. I know how it works. I can see the potential. This other thing, I guess we just have to get it into our hands.
I've heard great things about watching a movie inside an imaginary movie theater using an Oculus Rift. Have you tried that?
I have done that, and that's a weird experience because not only have I done that, but I sat next to a friend who was also wearing his, and it made it didn't look like him at all. It was just like a mannequin dude next to me, but that was him, and we got on Skype and talked while we're in this virtual place. And I got to say, I mean, there are some very uncanny moments where you're kind of looking next to you and seeing this person and sensing that they're right next to you. Sadly, it didn't do positional audio, so I couldn't tell kind of where they were sitting. But still, this experience of sitting in a movie theater where, you know, eventually one day we may be all sitting in one big giant theater and it's just virtualized for everybody, but it's the same theater. I mean, once you see that or feel that, you realize this is all way more possible than you maybe thought previously. And I'm using just like an SDK one, like the crappy original one that's got all kinds of issues and problems, low resolution and everything else. And even that has me pretty convinced that this stuff will be as revolutionary as everybody says.
Did you do any necking?
None. None at all.
It seems like the number one thing to do if you got another person in the virtual movie theater. I mean, it's just the two of you.
It's right. I mean, my wife's upstairs. What does she know? Just me and my
wife. Well, I mean, it's not even really a person. So
it's just a robot. Point. Sure. It's a figment of my imagination. Here's the thing, though. We always hear this. VR and AR and whatever technology came before it, be it video or whatever, it's porn and it's video games. Those two things drive this tech. So I guarantee you there's already probably, and I didn't go fishing for it, but there's probably already a bunch of weird experiences that'll, you know, do it for whoever. and I don't know what that
right.
is.
And the porn industry has not settled on a platform yet.
Right. They're going to go Vive.
So really all the Vive, Project Morpheus, Oculus Rift, secretly in Vegas, trying, you know, lobbying. For that industry.
Yeah, lots of rooms where they have testers and yeah, that's terrible. This all sounds very bad. But whatever. I mean, if they help propel it forward, I don't care. Whatever makes this stuff work for common people in ways that are meaningful. I don't necessarily want to trap myself in one of these all day and never leave, but my experience with them makes me wonder if I might be that guy who has a hard time getting out because
HoloLens just seems to really capture people's imagination. All the people who tried it were raving about it, except for the guy from The Verge, who was half raving about it, half pointing out like, well, the square is only so big and you can tell when something big goes off the screen. And that kind of bugged me. That A.D. Robinson wrote that. That's like the harshest critique of the HoloLens that I've seen. So yeah. I think we're still in the stage where all of this stuff is so unbelievable that it really exists. That we're still wowed by the fact that we could put this on and make it work.
Well, sure.
I have to say, I put in an Oculus Rift at South by Southwest Interactive a year ago and played a game based on Paperboy, the classic arcade game that involved like riding on a stationary bike and throwing newspapers with my arms. And I saw a video of it later. I was making a video show at the time. And it really looked like I was doing a Nazi salute. And that disturbs me. I'm concerned that we may be contributing to more people doing Nazi salutes unknowingly.
And it's one of those things where you have to get enough people in a row doing them, and then it becomes a problem.
Yeah. Right. And it's just.
If everybody's wearing Oculus Rifts, then we won't see it.
Exactly.
That's a good point.
Until someone makes a movie of it that we all watch together in our Oculus Rift.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's a big, just to tag on to that, that's a big, big part of everybody's push. Oculus and Facebook have already set up a team who are focused on nothing but narrative experiences, meaning not necessarily interactive worlds, but worlds that you can watch a film taking place in and 360 views and using 360 view cameras, and you'll be able to stand in the scene and look at different actors at different times. And, you know, it's that stuff's happening, and that stuff's pretty compelling to me, because how that all goes could really quite literally spell what the future of entertainment is. It sounds hyperbole, but I kind of am a believer right now.
Adam Lissagore, who runs a company called Sandwich Video that makes a lot of tech videos for startups and stuff like that, is the person who enthused to me about watching movies inside a pretend movie theater. And he himself, and he's always been a very forward-looking guy, is very keyed into the possibilities of creating a narrative and maybe even a linear narrative experience for that platform. So I believe you.
Yep.
Hey, got some breaking news here. Actually, just got posted on The Verge. Josh Trank off the second Star Wars anthology film.
What?
Yep.
Wait, Josh Trank, the director?
Wrote on in a post on StarWars.com, after a year of having the incredible honor of developing with wonderful and talented people at Lucasfilm, I'm making a personal decision to move forward on a different path.
Oh.
One would assume that's the path out the door. The second anthology film, if you know, Star Wars anthology are the ones that are not episode 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
Yeah.
They're the ones like Star Wars, Rogue One?
Yeah.
Is going to be the first one. So Josh Trank's been working on the second one for a while, and I guess it didn't work out.
Well, for those who don't know, he directed and wrote Chronicle, which is kind of a big indie superhero hit. He is currently getting ready to release the first Fantastic Four reboot, or this,
right.
I guess, second reboot. And then he was to be immediately working on this. That's surprising. I mean, that's a pretty intense job for a fresh 31-year-old who had his big, had some incredible success in his late 20s. Maybe it was just too much, or creatively he didn't want to have the kind of incredible he's one of those scrutiny.
Few people who really wanted to bring Jar Jar back.
Maybe that was it. I don't know.
I'm interested to know what that experience is like. I have a friend who's directing one of those Star Wars movies, but like, he's not a good enough friend that I could be like, hey, tell me some secrets that are secret or whatever. Mm. So I feel like maybe after his Star Wars movie comes out, then I could ask him, hey, was it weird to work on that Star Wars movie?
Well, we kind of have the same thing. I only know him barely through other things. Tom, you know, like Gary Whitta better. He did the first run at the draft for Rogue One. And I would love it. None of them can talk about anything right now, but it'd be really nice to one day hear Whitta talk about it. Hear who's directing this next one? Maybe it's the one you're talking
Gareth
about.
Edwards.
Gareth Edwards.
Yeah.
I'd love to know what he has to say. Like
Rogue One. He's doing Rogue One.
Yeah. Or even J.J. Abrams. Even J.J. Abrams, who's not doing the next proper sequel to Seven, somebody else, the guy who did Brick, Ryan
Johnson. That's the guy who's my pal. Yeah.
Oh, cool. I love his movies. Oh my gosh. Brick.
He's great. He's Looper. The best guy too. He's
a wonderful. Seems dude. Like a cool dude. But it has to be the most scrutiny induced, like just laser focus job in the history of movies. And I can't imagine how you'd hold up under that. But
I have a friend who was like 4th AD or 7th AD on that first Star Trek reboot movie. And I remember that a big part of her job was ushering actors through secret underground tunnels so that no one could tell what kind of space alien was going to be in that movie.
Really? Like,
yeah, she's getting paid union wages.
Wow.
That's be like, hide the Klingon or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. She's like, I just imagined her like in a flat-bottom boat punting actors through sewers.
like some kind of Venetian, you know.
Wow.
Or, yeah.
I don't think it, Tom, with the breaking news. Nice job on that. Before we continue on, we're going to take a fast break. When we come back, it's Pop Quiz. Stay tuned. This episode of Current Geek brought to you by Braintree, code for easy online payments. If you're a developer or product manager searching for the right payments API, you got to check out Braintree. It's an easy way to accept multiple payment types on mobile with one integration. All the stuff you need, Apple Pay, PayPal, Bitcoin, Vimeo, Venmo, I say that wrong. All the major credit card and debit cards, 130 global currencies. With Braintree version 0 SDK, it's one of the smallest little snippets of code you'll ever see, and you're all set in less than 10 minutes. Simple, secure payments, code you can integrate in minutes. Are you an app developer? Go right now and check it out. It is the most secure way to pay. Their back-end security and merchant protection. Never worry about fraud or that you're going to get hacked. Braintree has you covered. No surprises. They're awesome. Go check them out. That's BraintreePayments.com/currentgeek. Review the documentation. Simple and concise. Play around in the sandbox. Give it a try with no commitment. Some of the best integration going into production. After you've integrated Braintree for the first $50,000 in transactions, they are fee-free. No fees on that first $50,000. Just imagine that. That's BraintreePayments.com/currentgeek. We thank them for their support of the show. And we're back. Oh, looky here, Tom. Guess what time it is?
Is it pop quiz time?
Yes!
America scores and wins!
Jesse has no idea what's coming because this is the favorite thing everyone loves about the show. It's their favorite segment. It's where we ask pop quiz questions of our guests in areas of their expertise. They don't know what the topic is. They have no idea. It's 8 questions. They do the best they can. At the end, Tom evaluates that score, puts it up against everybody who's come before. If he gets an answer right, he gets it wrong, and Tom will score it the only way he knows how, which is erratically and without much sense.
By the rather complex rules of the pop quiz.
That's what I meant. That's what I meant, of course.
Oh boy.
Jesse, are you ready for your questions?
When you say areas of my expertise, I assume you mean the 1989 San Francisco Giants?
No. But
the really answer is Kurt Manwaring.
All the answers. I actually struggled with this because while we were trying to brainstorm about your topic, I listened to your show, I always hear about these albums you love or these obscure things that you'll bring up toward the end of Bullseye and talk about. And I thought, what if it's one of those? And then I thought, let's just throw that out and say, this is John Hodgman trivia. Since you're pals, you know all there is to know. And we all love John Hodgman, so here it is. First,
this is like my most important business colleague. So you've really, in addition to being one of my best pals, So you've really put me in a rough position here.
Okay, all right, well, here we go. Question number one. When is John Hodgman's birthday? This is public knowledge, by the way.
And then he opens up on that question for you.
Yeah, I don't get that one.
All right, the answer is June 3rd. We don't have a year, but June 3rd is the day. What was John Hodgman's first film? What movie was he in first?
What movie was he in first?
Sure, I'll give you a hint. Boy,
Baby Mama? Was it Baby Mama?
Look at you. Got it already. There you go. I was going to hint and tell you he played a fertility specialist, but you were absolutely right.
That's Baby a great movie, Mama. By the way. If anybody missed Baby Mama, it's a really funny movie.
All right. I really liked him in Coraline in particular.
Oh, he's wonderful.
Yeah, it was really great. How many books has John Hodgman written? This does not count books he is credited in or a contributor to, but ones he has written.
Well, he's written 3 books.
Let's find out if that's correct. You are correct. Areas of My Expertise, 2005, ironically. More Information Than You Require, my favorite book, and That Is All, in 2011.
Representing the trilogy of all world knowledge.
That's right. Right. For the 05 book had the 700 Hobos in it, which was fantastic.
I met John when that book first came out, before he had gone on The Daily Show and stuff. He came on my show. We had a really good time. I went to his book reading in San Francisco, and it was literally me, my wife, like 3 people that worked at the bookstore, the funny old guy whose job it was to drive John Hodgman around, John Hodgman, Jonathan Colton, who was on tour with John Hodgman, in a coonskin cap and suit, as a mountain man, and Dave Eggers and Dave Eggers' baby.
Wow, that's a
and then like a week later, he went on The Daily Show. Became a famous person. He said like his next tour date, which was in like Seattle or something, had like 350 people at it.
Well, then you're like the meat in his fame sandwich between the bread that is Apple commercials and the other bread that is The Daily Show. Look at that. You're like the thin slice of ham right in the middle there. I don't know what any of that means. Here's your next question. What year did Netflix John Hodgman Ragnarok debut?
I'm going to say 2014.
You are so close. 2013, year before. Very close.
We'll give him 0.1.
All right. See? Weird. Where was John Hodgman born?
Brookline, Massachusetts.
Nailed it. You're doing way better than I expected. I'm super impressed. Next one. What years did John Hodgman play the PC in the Mac PC commercials for Apple?
Oh, wow. Okay, so he got the audition based on that appearance as a guest on The Daily Show.
All right.
If that was 2000, we already said that was 2005, right?
Yes, it wasn't.
So I'm going to say that, I'm going to say 2005. It could have been 2006.
You are, okay, where do you think it ended?
I'm going to say 2012.
You are incorrect. 2006, we'll give you that, but it ended in 2010.
I'm sorry, Scott, but he is correct. He said, I'm going to say, and then he said it.
Yeah.
So he gets a full point.
Thank you very much.
I see what you did there. Second to last question. It's a big one. What episode of Battlestar Galactica starred John Hodgman?
Oh, gosh. I don't know what the name of it is, but can I tell you a secret about it?
Yeah, of course. He was a brain surgeon, right? Or something in there?
Yeah. And our mutual friend Jane Espenson, I think, got him the part. She was writing on the show. She may have even been almost in charge of the show at that point. But it was like his last act as a journalist, which is what he was before he was an entertainer, was to write a feature for the New York Times Magazine about Battlestar Galactica. And it was not like a John Hodgman celebrity entertainer writes about Battlestar. It was just him as a reporter for the New York Times.
Right.
And while he did that, he like angled his way in to get a role on the show.
It was
so there's
great.
A point.
Yeah, I give him a point for that. It's great backs in inside knowledge. All right, final question. No, sorry. Oh, well, you don't know the you don't know the episode, do you? Or do you?
No, I don't. Okay.
Is another point for use of distraction.
it totally worked. Totally worked on me. No exit is the answer, by the way. No exit.
Favorite play.
Final question. What is John Hodgman's middle name?
Wow, you know what? I don't know John Hodgman's middle name. I'm going to take an educated guess.
All right.
And say Bartholomew.
That's probably preferable, but it's Kellogg.
Kellogg.
Heir to the
middle name.
Yeah, yep. Cereal fortune and all that weirdness. Huh. Nicely done. You've answered all your questions the best to your ability. Now Tom will tell us how he did. How'd he do there, Tom?
A highly respectable 6.1, one of our highest scores of late.
Yeah, I'd say you're in the head of the pack. Nicely
done. Thank you guys very much. I'm very grateful to be at the top of the pile.
Well, if only...
A rarefied group.
Yeah, it is kind of rare. And usually we have two people here so they compete, but you competed with everyone, and that makes you our winner this week.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
It's time for Forecast. It used to be an entire show. Now it's a segment on this show. And this one I put in here, and it comes from a recent viewing of a bunch of esports. ESPN3 last week showed the final four games of what was originally kind of a, kind of like you'd see with the NCAA basketball championship kind of layout, where they had as many teams and as many games, I think, as you would have in that tournament. And they had like Sweet 16 and, you know, Final Eight equivalents and all of that. And they culminated into this thing where they're, and I forget what the theater was, but in LA, they had a big final show off with these.
You're talking about Heroes of the Storm.
Heroes of the Storm, right? I should probably make that clear. A video game made by Blizzard Entertainment. Now, it's not the first time that many people have seen this thing streaming online. That's happened a lot with League of Legends and Dota and these other games, but this is the first time anything like this has been shown as a live, you know, play-by-play sort of called sporting event on a national cable network over the television. So it was kind of a big deal, and it went really well. There was a lot of success around it, a lot of viewers, a lot of people really liked it. There's a few stodgy old sportscasters who think it's lame because they don't understand how this is a sport. Anyway, I think there is enough popularity and momentum behind this right now that this stuff by the year 2025 will be such a mainstream event that millions and millions of people, whether they play the games or not, will tune in, will be interested, will place bets in Vegas, that which already kind of happened last week. Like that kind of stuff, I think it's going to become a mainstream thing. It may not be as big as the Super Bowl, but it'll be at least where hockey is today and growing. Thoughts?
Wow. Yeah. Bold.
Yeah, bold, right?
In the year 2525 or
2525. When my
I have a colleague, I have a colleague at my office who I'm 33 and she's in her mid late 20s. She is a League of Legends fanatic.
Yeah.
And went to the League of Legends grand finale, or whatever it's called, or a really sophisticated grasp of the lingo associated with esports.
Yeah.
And it was at the Staples Center, the largest arena in Los Angeles. It was full of like 15 or 20,000 people watching those dudes move their mice.
It's insane, right? Like just so, I mean, it's a very hardcore, distinct group, but when they get together, they seem formidable.
Yeah.
The thing that I wonder is whether we will have mainstream events in the manner in which we had them before. Mm. So, yeah, you know, it used to be baseball was the sport, and then football and basketball came along, and hockey got some popularity as well. And they were massively mainstream, but they were massively mainstream at a time when we had three channels.
Mm-hmm.
And then that carried on through cable, but cable brought us a wider variety. And now everybody can, you can have a niche thing fill the Staples Center and not everybody knows about it because not everybody's watching the same thing anymore. So I look at UFC, I look at Ultimate Fighting as a path forward for esports because it's hugely popular, rabid fans, but I don't think it's mainstream yet.
Mm.
And maybe it'll become mainstream. I don't know. But I mean, because I've been to some of the Blizzard championships at BlizzCon as my only live experience with esports. And the feeling is the same you get at any sporting event, like people who are way into it, casters describing the action, people discussing the strategy, and then people leaping to their feet and cheering when somebody wins. It's got all the trappings, all the feelings, all the emotion. So I have no doubt that it has the potential. My question is whether anything can capture a mass audience the way sports have in the past.
Well, part of it too is they're a construct of their time. You know, baseball started and thrived in a time that really helped serve baseball. It was about live events. It was about cities building cool places for people to go and
getting over the Civil War.
Sure. All those things. Yes. I mean, if I learned anything from Ken Burns, it was
finding
that.
Something to use with all that space outside of your city.
Mother, I write this letter from the third base. That, and then, you know, jump to football. Football is like another part. It's a technological leap in a lot of ways. And I don't mean just modern football. I mean, when it came around, it was like, well, we can make these pads and these balls and these stadiums and, you know, and that can grow and be something. And it just feels like our future sports? Like, at some point, are we going to go, well, you know, we've had baseball, hockey, football, and basketball for so long, and soccer. Maybe it's time for something new. And I just think this has the best chance of being, again, a construct of its time, but also new, different, accessible, you know, and becoming a bigger thing. Now, but I completely agree with you, Tom, because you're always right about this stuff. It's like the way we, you know, if we would have guessed 10 years ago that we would have the kind of media consumption options we have now, we weren't even close to what we have.
I feel like my feeling about it is I can see a group of millions of people being interested in it, whether it's a thing that millions of people watch simultaneously as they do, say, the NBA Finals, or is something that's below the Super Bowl but is a genuinely mainstream phenomenon. It might be like hockey, I think, might be a little bit of a stretch. I'm more inclined to say arena football.
All right, fair enough. And you'll have a rabid fan base for arena football. You'll always have that, or at least I think we will. So it's the same kind of thing. You'll have this fan base. But man, in some countries, they're bigger than, I mean, I don't know what our equivalents are, I guess movie stars, but they are huge stars in Korea and China, parts of Asia where this has really kicked off. Esports is not just a thing. It is the thing, and national sports in some ways. And
I guess that's a really good point that Jesse just brought up, which is, will you get people who aren't following the sport to want to tune in to see the big event, right? That's the thing that makes football the king of sports in the United States, is everybody watches the Super Bowl, even if they don't care anything about football. I mean, will we ever have people watching the Heroes of the Storm or the StarCraft championship, even if they don't follow the sport?
Yeah.
I'm going to be watching the Sim Ant Championship.
Oh my gosh, I love that game. I loved it.
You know, you can finally embed that in a tweet now by going to archive.org and using one of their DOSBox simulators.
That's true.
Finally. Yeah. Oh my God, I've been sending so many tweets. Yeah. Let's say, like, imagine you're playing Sim Ant right now. Yeah. Or, like, let's just say that there was an ant simulation in these 140 characters. I'm so glad that I can finally just embed it as I had been dreaming of lo these many years.
I know, right?
We all signed up for Twitter.
Oh, I loved SimAnt. Now you've got me wanting to play it, and now I can. Well, there you go. We got one call, or one email, rather, from a listener, Richard J. Straffolino. Think I got that right? Probably.
Yeah, you did.
Current Good Geekers.
Dickie J. Straff.
Nah, you know the guy. Old Straff. Current Geekers. I was looking at a movie previously directed by J.J. Abrams, and it's hard not to be impressed by their box office successes. Still, based on what the Star Wars prequels made, if Episode 7 is even decent, it should substantially dwarf all his other efforts. According to Wikipedia, provide your own grain of salt here, his previous movies have grossed $1.51 billion combined. The Phantom Menace in 99 grossed just over $1 billion. Even with the changes of the movie industry, this doesn't seem like it'll be too much of a stretch to imagine that Force Awakens could gross more than any of his other movies combined, which is kind of insane. Love to know if you fine folk think that's possible. Rich from lovely Cleveland. All right. Absolutely. And it will. And there's no question. I mean, if Furious 7 is, but it's already at 1.6 billion.
Worldwide.
I wonder if he's talking worldwide here on this other stuff.
Yeah, I'm sure he
didn't
is.
Say, but let's say Series that's
7
worldwide.
Is at 324 million domestic. I can't find a worldwide.
Right. Worldwide is somewhere in the 1.6, and it beat Frozen just like 2 days ago. So Frozen was like currently in the last couple of years, the big leader. If it can do that, and Avengers is on tap to do that, Avengers 2, there's no way Star Wars doesn't beat that. Of course it's even if it's okay. Even if it's...
I don't know. Doesn't have Vin Diesel.
Is that our missing...
People want to see the guns.
Yeah, I guess so. But I want to see guns with lasers coming out of them. So, I don't know. Maybe it's wishful thinking, but I don't think there's going to be a bigger thing than Star Wars for a long time. And that may diminish over time, and these standalone movies may not be great. I don't know. Who knows until we get there, but... I'm pretty sure it will. Why won't it? I mean, that's the trend this year.
I it's not about the money. Star Wars has never been about the
money. Wait, it's entirely about the money now that you mention it. Well, anyway, we got a good deal. $4 billion, not too bad. And we appreciate your calls and your emails. If you want to leave us a voicemail, 801-471-0462. You can leave us an email at currentgeek@gmail.com. We'll read it right here on the show. ladies and gentlemen, that represents the end of the podcast. Jesse Thorne, I don't even know where to send people because there's so much of it, and I'd love it all. So you, why don't you give me some focus? Where do you want people to go to find more about you?
Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to break it down by type of person. If you want to hear me be a fake bailiff in Judge John Hodgman's internet court, you can listen to Judge John Hodgman. If you want to hear me do classy interviews with folks from the worlds of arts and culture, you can listen to my NPR show, Bullseye. And if you just want to hear me swear and tell dick jokes, you can listen to my podcast, Jordan Jesse Go.
And might I recommend people just go to MaximumFun.org and behold how many things there are to hear.
Yeah, it's like the Grand Canyon. You got to go there once.
It's crazy. Anyway, thank you for being here, man. We really appreciate it.
Well, I'm very grateful for the invitation. Thank you so much for having me. And thank you for running me down at that strange social media convention we were at San Diego.
Yeah, good job,
Tom. It was kind of an odd day, wasn't it? Yeah. Oh,
very, very, very strange. I have never talked to so many solopreneurs in my life.
Is that is a word, isn't it? Solopreneur.
Well, no, I mean, not yeah. really.
No,
not,
we just made
not
it.
Not amongst humans, but yeah. It is amongst solopreneurs.
I'm going to define myself that
sure.
way.
Sure. Tom, yeah. anything else before we cut
well,
out?
Well, you could listen to my new podcast, Solopreneur Today. It'll be posted up at tommerritt.com very soon. No, folks, you know, I've got a book. I keep telling you about it. And it's free in a PDF. If you're like, I don't know if I want to pay for your writing merit. So just go to tommerrittbooks.com. Read up about Citadel 32. It's about a base on the moon trying to get by after an apocalypse on Earth strands everybody up there. But there's also some people on Earth after the apocalypse trying to figure out if there's really people on the moon. So go check it out, because the real reason you want to buy it is Scott Johnson's cover art.
Oh, thanks, man. It was if there's one thing I really like doing, it is creating cover art for your book releases. So I'm going to argue in favor of the hardbound copy.
I like that you like that.
Yeah. Bring it to Nerdtacular. We'll both sign it. We're both going to be there. That's coming up soon. Some big stuff going on around the network. People, just check out frogpants.com for more. I think it's going to do it for us. Andrew Allen does our theme music. Alpha Geek Radio does our live audio stream. Big thanks to them. We don't thank them enough. You want to email us? Easy sneezy. Currentgeek@gmail.com. We're on Twitter @currentgeek, @ScottJohnson, @AceDetect for Tom, and @JesseThorne for Jesse. Currentgeek.reddit.com. What else? Currentgeek.com for everything else. I think that's going to do it for us. For me, for Tom, and for Jesse Thorne. We'll see you next time.
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week, we take a look at the latest stab for ending the patent troll problem, and whether Google is really just becoming the biggest of the patent trolls instead of solving the problem. Google announced the patent purchase promotion this week, in which Google will offer to buy any patented intellectual property that an inventor or patent owner wants to sell. From May 8th to 22nd, interested sellers can submit what patent rights they seek to sell and an asking price into Google. And Google will decide after reviewing the offers what they will purchase by June 26th. There is currently no clear marketplace for selling patent rights, so what Google is offering here is relatively innovative, while also being potentially scary. Google is marketing this program as a way to slow the patent troll problem. Congress has struggled to find the right way to stop trollish patent enforcement activities, while also protecting the rights of legitimate inventors and investors who may need to defend their rights in court. Google thinks that this program will allow patent sellers to sell to them and hopefully keep those same patent rights out of the hands of assertion entities, which are the trolls who buy patent rights just to threaten lawsuits later to extort settlements for many others. Will that goal actually be achieved? Or is Google really becoming poised to be the biggest of the patent trolls? That's the open question. Google will, as a publicly traded company, always be concerned about the bottom line. This patent purchase program will need to generate revenue or save costs in some manner commensurate with the high expense Google will undertake to procure all these patent rights. That money could come from cheap licenses to many licensors, a de facto Creative Commons program for patents, in the best case scenario. Google may also treat some of these acquisitions as a way to avoid lost costs that would be paid to its lawyers to defend lawsuits later if someone else buys rights relevant to their own products. However, Google could just end up selling the rights later to trolls, or taking others to court, much like the same patent assertion entities everyone complains about now. The bottom line is, no single step will solve the patent troll problem for good. but Google is taking an interesting stab with this program. We can only hope Google is investing this money to make a better patent system, rather than merely for strategic, or even worse, trolling reasons. Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and legal-themed questions as segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy.
Hi, this is Phil back with another Game Punting Pick of the Week from the world of crowdfunded tabletop games. This week we're extra excited about Rauparth's Chaos Wars, the return of a classic line of fantasy gaming miniatures over on Kickstarter. Now these figures, which were some of the most popular and iconic miniatures in the genre during the 80s and 90s, have been out of circulation since the shuttering of Rauparth a decade and a half ago. Now Ironwind Metals, the company which acquired these lines, has done a great job of getting some of the former Rauparth assets back into production, but this massive line of over 550 fantasy armor figures has been resistant to resurrection until now. Now this campaign is an effort to jumpstart that reintroduction, beginning with the fantasy, elf, and orc factions, and expanding from this foundation. The return of this line will make a lot of fans of these classic figures, including myself, very excited. This campaign has funded and started moving into stretch goals, which will add more figures to this first release. Backer levels are available for anything from a few figures for role players up to just massive armies for battle players. You can get in on the campaign until May 18th. For news and reviews of crowdfunded tabletop games, check us out on iTunes or at GamePunting.com. Happy gaming!
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.